You are listening to a special episode of the Punk News Podcast number 239. Back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we got a super special, extra special, triple special episode for you tonight. First of all, we got to address the elephant in the room. Dynamite Adam White, fellow podcast host, is not here because he's sick. So let's all give well wishes to Adam White and hope he's back next week, because I don't know what I would do if Adam White was not on this podcast. I would just probably Harry Carry the whole thing, burn it to the ground, and then just not even start anew. Just that would be it. If there's no Adam White, there's no Punk News Podcast. There's no Punk News. There's no internet without Dynamite Adam White. But in the meantime, we had to bring in a heavy-duty wrecking crew to represent Dynamite Adam White, because he is such a powerful person. First of all, we are here with podcast favorite, Tricky Ricky Frankel, reviews writer, interviewer. Tricky Ricky, what's happening, man? What's going on down in L.A.?
Just, you know what? I'm just revving up for and thinking my strategy to getting to Amoeba for Record Store Day. So,
and I know we're all excited about that. So we'll talk about that in a minute. And also we are here with everyone's favorite podcast producer, Greg DeSimp, Greg Simpson, reviews writer and podcast editor, podcast director, Greg Simpson. What is happening? How are you down there in the Midwest?
Greg Ope's gone. This is Madball Rule Smith Bacon. And I'm Mad Cut up in here. Got to bring the muscle. Represent my Canadian brethren who is sick. And I forget it.
Very good.
I'm good. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you see, podcast listeners, I think Greg's being passive aggressive because he knows how much I hate to even pay credence or even acknowledge the existence of trolls at Punk News. And
let's,
I'm going to say it again,
Matt Ramone.
Because we always say it. Matt Ramone and I squashed the beef, so I can't talk about Matt Ramone.
Okay.
We did, but I don't want to talk about Matt Ramone and I have called a truce, and so that's that. So anyways, what I was going to say is, as always, the Punk News trolls, the Punk News commenters do not represent the Punk News listeners, the Punk News writers, the Punk News readers. And in fact, there's really only about 5 or 6 Punk News trolls, but our Facebook is at 50,000. So what does that tell you? You see what I'm saying? Punk News trolls, Punk News commenters do not represent Punk News readers at all, and actually it's usually an inverse relationship. And lastly, we are here with an extra special guest. He's an OG Punk Newser. We are here with, some of you might remember him, but actually a lot of you kids might not even remember this guy, because that's how OG he is. We are here with former editor Scott Heisel. Scott Heisel, he used to be the chiefy weefy of Alternative Press, and now he's the chiefy weefy of Substream Magazine. Scott Heisel, so happy to have you on the podcast. How you doing, dude?
You know, I'm 24, and after a shitty breakup, I went from 180 to 166 pounds, and I stopped losing weight, but I'm still a little flabby. How can I harden up my midsection? You know, crunches seem to be only working real slow, and it's really not that much. I drink a lot of beer, and it's my only option to quit all the booze. I do lots of running, you know, 4 miles, 5 times a week. Do you guys have any suggestions on how to stop this plateau I've hit and get a little more hard and lean?
I bet Madball Rules will step in and post on the news story for this, and he'll tell you all about his favorite NYC gyms.
NYC. I'm doing great, by the way. Thank you, Rams.
NYC HC, yeah.
So anyways, the reason we're having Greg and Scott on together is because they actually run their own podcast called why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about your own podcast that you guys run through the Punk News Podcast web of podcasts?
Go ahead. Sure, Greg. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, my pleasure. So, well, Greg had his wildly successful, world-renowned, award-winning podcast, Two Gregs, One Podcast.
All those things are true.
I was jealous of that, of its success, and so I murdered the other Greg. Now, my lawyer says to say allegedly murdered, but I murdered the other Greg. And then Greg Simpson approached me and said, hey, you know, you have a decent voice. You want to do a podcast? I said, yes, I do. I've just been fired from my job of 10 and a half years, and I want nothing more than to talk shit about that place. But I can't do that because I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So
your lawyer keeps very busy.
Yeah, right. But so we have a podcast. We started a podcast called Best Midwestern, where the focus of the podcast is Midwestern music, whether it be past or present, or even looking toward the future, like up and coming bands. So, you know, every episode, we're either looking back at classic records that Greg and I both grew up with and loved and telling their stories, or we're reviewing new albums that are coming out of the Midwest, or we're talking about shows we've seen and that kind of stuff. So focusing a lot on the middle portion of the country that we both agree gets overlooked a lot in most mainstream media attention. And there's a lot of fucking great bands from the Midwest, so that's what we're trying to do.
Hells yeah. And the episode that'll be coming out, well, it'll come out as of tomorrow as we're recording this. So episode 3 will have been out, and we talk about our favorite shows that we've booked, shows that we've played on the bill, and shows that we've just attended, weird shows, cool shows, all that kind of stuff. And then probably around when this posts, there will be episode 4, our interview with Josh Caterer of the Smoking Popes. So, yeah, that's kind of like what we're up to. So,
And Greg, how can they find that? What should they Google if they want to find that?
Well, Best Midwestern, we've got facebook.com/Best Midwestern, and also on Twitter @Best Midwestern. So pretty easy there.
Well, there you go. And oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What's that, Greg?
I was going to say, we should also point out, too, that in our logo features none other than Brittany Strummer of Punk News fame. She is the model in our podcast logo, and she is repping, I believe, is this correct, Greg? She's repping Laura Jane Grace's old jean jacket.
Yeah, they've become like best buds or something. And so I think the story was Brittany was like, she was at, I guess it was an Against Me show, and I was talking to Laura and was like, oh, I lost my jacket that had my favorite Against Me, like, back patch, or it was an old t-shirt she put out as the patch. And so Laura was basically like, here, you can have this one. So we threw the Best Midwestern thing on there. I tried to make it look like a patch. And so that's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, have it. Laura Jane Grace will literally give you the shirt off her back if you are a fan. let's talk. Ricky was mentioning it earlier, Record Store Day. Has been. Is everybody still there? Scott, you there? Ricky, you there?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Ricky, is Ricky there?
Yep.
Oh, weird. Okay. Anyways, so that was awkward. Just so the Punk News listeners know, I actually have to catch a plane later on tonight, so I might jet out, so we'll see. Anyways, Record Store Day, it's back. Every year, Record Store Day is the annual, I don't know, festival celebration of Record Store Days, where a bunch of exclusive records are released. A lot of people like it because they put out a lot of cool, exclusive records. A lot of people hate it because they think it's cheesy and that, quote, every day is Record Store Day. And also, frankly, the records are kind of expensive. This year, they just released the list, and I gotta say, the list is looking pretty kicking. We've got an exclusive Off live record, a Tegan and Sarah live record, a Dwarf single, a re-release of Joe Strummer's 101ers Bands, an Against Me 7-inch, a Johnny Cash live record, a Dave House EP, a Stooges live record that was previously released as a CD-only release, Metallica's first demo, the was it No Life Till Leather release or whatever it's called. Are you guys digging this? Are you guys pro Record Store Day? Are you guys anti-Record Store Day? Is it cheesy? Are you down with any of these exclusive releases?
I'll tell you my experience. You know, I've been doing Record Store Day for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years at this point. It feels like I'm an early adopter. You know what I mean? I'm one of those cool guys who buys records. It's definitely become something that's very crass and not the band. It's become a very commercialized day, which is a bummer, but that's what happens with anything cool. It's something that's cool, and then people figure out how to make money off it, and then it's no longer cool. So there are myriad things wrong with Record Store Day. That'd be an entirely another podcast to go into that. That being said, I still always drop. Last year, I think I dropped $600 on Record Store Day. And I didn't think I would. And then all of a sudden, I'm checking out. I'm like, oh, fuck, I bought a lot of records. Well, I should clarify that, like, 120 of that was the Cake Box set because that band's fucking great. So that's like a big chunk of it. Plus about another $100 of it was stuff for my wife and stuff for my friends that couldn't make it out.
Do you have a shopping cart? How can you carry all that?
I have very strong arms. That's why I work out all year long.
Man cut. Man cut, bro.
I still love the experience. I mean, you know, I'm someone who goes to record stores regularly. You know, it's not something that I just wait once a year for. But it's nice to go into a store, like my local store that I love, and I love the owner, and I love his stock, and to see everyone there, it feels great, and it makes me miss the 90s when I would work at a record store and people actually shopped all the time and didn't just come in once every month. So I support the idea of going out. I wish that it weren't so abused by major labels to just dump off garbage stock that they could never sell otherwise, but because it's a novelty item, it'll sell at that point, you know? Like, does anyone really need a Disturbed box set? No, but they do it anyway.
What store do you go to? Let's rep our favorite stores. Why not?
My favorite store in Cleveland is My Mind's Eye Records, which is on Detroit Avenue in Lakewood. If you can find them on Facebook, you can also go to mymindseyerecords.com. They are by far the best store in the greater Cleveland area. Highly recommend it if you like punk, psych, garage, metal, all sorts of crazy bootlegs and stuff like that. They carry as many Nunslaughter records as they can carry. They have everything. So I think, John Gentile, you would really like the store. It's very much up your alley.
I've actually been there once, and it's definitely a cool store. They've got a lot of rarities. I'm a huge fan of rarities. They've got rarities all over the store, and actually, they've got an exclusive Black Flag picture there from a very rare era of the band. It's the Chuck Biscuits era of the band, and I've never seen the photo before. It's got Des Cadena like holding a flower, Chuck Biscuits, Chuck Dukowski, Greg Ginn, and Henry Rollins. And Henry Rollins looks like he's a member of Suicidal Tendencies in the photo, which is wild. And also, sometimes the dude's dad works there, who's like 64, actually more like 75. And so you bring up these records, and he has no idea what they are. So he like reads them out loud. So if you see the old guy behind the counter, I almost bought an Anal Cunt CD once, nice. And I didn't, because I would have brought up for this old dude. He'd be like, Anal Cunt, So, but I'm
English is not his first language, so it's pretty great. But there's also another cool thing he has. There's a lot of really cool memorabilia around the store that people don't really see the first time they go there. So look around. He has a fucking sneaker autographed by James Hetfield, like from 30 years ago. So that's pretty rad as far as I'm concerned.
Which Amoeba are you going to, Ricky?
Well, okay, so
I'm going to jump in. Is Amoeba a dangerous place to go? Because it's such a huge place, that's where everybody goes.
Depends which one you go to. Mm. I've been to all three. San Francisco, I've only been on Record Store Day. I've only been to the Berkeley Amoeba. But I've been to all three. San Francisco's awesome. It's like, number one is Hollywood. Number two is San Francisco. Number three is Berkeley. But it's not a dangerous place. It was more like Record Store Day weekend for me. The day before, I think it was Friday. That Friday, I went down to San Francisco for my school to the Fat Record Store Day opening. Fat Records opens their doors for like one day a month. They did it for a Record Store Day. I dropped a lot of money on one 7-inch there. And then the next day, I stayed at my sister's place in Berkeley because she goes to school there. And then got up at like 6:30 in the morning to go to the Amoeba Berkeley. It got a little wild in there to the point where the staff were actually videoing the crowd rushing into the store on their iPhones. This year is my first SoCal Record Store release day, Record Store Day. So I'll be at Hollywood this time, which I've seen only video of, and it gets ridiculously crowded. So I'm going to get there. I'll probably leave my house around like 5 to get there. It's hopefully 5:30. It's going to be brutal, but you know what? There's some stuff on here I really want.
I'm picturing it's like those videos from like Tickle Me Elmo and like shit. There's something every year where like at Christmas, everyone's murdering each other.
Well, it was the closest to, I never go to stores on like Black Friday or anything like that, but that was the closest I've ever gotten to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was weird. Like all the, I felt like a rat in a maze, like trying to find this one off 7-inch, and I think pretty sure we were getting laughed at by the staff. It was a little weird.
Ricky,
but it was fun.
Ricky, what are you looking for this year?
I have like my definite list, and then there's like stuff I might want. I want that off Live at the BBC 10-inch. Let's see what else I want. That Against Me 7-inch, that's like my number one. I want that Dwarves 7-inch.
Man, I want that so bad, I'm not going to be able to get that because that's a West Coast thing, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
It's nine, there are 900, I'm looking at the list right now, it's 900 copies.
Yeah, I'm hoping
you should be able to find it.
On eBay or something, you mean.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, probably. Then also what was not in the article, which I wasn't aware of until like maybe an hour or two ago, is Red Scare is releasing a Cobra Skulls Live at the BBC 7-inch, which I thought was interesting. So I might want that. I also might want the Gwar Metal Blade thing. I might. I'm not sure on that one.
That's going to be mega expensive, though. That's going to be like $50.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% on
that
one.
Guar's third album is called America Must Be Destroyed. It's without question one of their best records. It was originally released on vinyl on single LP in Brazil in like 1992, and now they're doing a double vinyl version it's played at 45, which is kind of dumb because 45 and 33 only makes a difference if you don't have enough room, but there's plenty of room on the record for it. So it's going to be like a $40 or $50 record.
Oof. Yeah, so I honestly just want off Dwarves and Against Me. This is actually the most I've ever wanted on the list.
Yeah, me too. Greg, what are you looking for? What record store are you hitting up?
Well, this is my first record store day in my new town of Nobody Caresville, Indiana.
That's true, actually. Nobody does care, that's true.
I'm close. I'm a stone's throw from Chicago now, so I guess that makes it better than before. But so there are, the Bloomington is real hipster / hippie / kind of town. I mean, it's just got a lot of weirdos, so the record stores are good in Bloomington now. In Lafayette and West Lafayette. Well, actually, they're both in West Lafayette. There are two record stores. One is huge but incredibly overpriced, and I hear that they barely celebrate Record Store Day, though hopefully they'll step it up this year. They're called JL Records. Their inventory is gigantic. I mean, I buy stuff from them because it's things I can't find anywhere else, and lots of used records and CDs. And there's also the long-standing Vaughn's Records, which... anybody who's ever lived or, you know, here or gone to Purdue knows Vaughn's. They've been around since 68, I believe. They've expanded to have like a bookstore and all this other stuff. The record store has shrunk, unfortunately, but they do live bands and get all the releases. Well, I don't know about all, but they get a lot of the releases. So I'll probably be hitting up Vaughn's first and then JL Records. As far as stuff I'm looking forward to, I guess it's going to be more slim pickings than the places you guys are going to. So I'll probably just have to wait and see what catches my fancy.
I've got two favorite record stores out in the Philadelphia area. There's Jupiter Records, which is kind of like a cool kids kind of record store down in Wilmington, Delaware, which is a great, great record store. And I mean, you're not going to find better record stores than the Bay Area, but for an East Coast record store, Jupiter Records is great. However, they're kind of last record store day, they didn't get any exclusives, and they used that money to buy rare records from collections, which was cool. But this year, there's a lot of exclusive stuff that I want, so I'm probably going to go to my other favorite East Coast record store called Salty Dog out on the main line, which is very much a dad style record store, and that's good for me because that means people won't be as much into the punk rock stuff. So those are both great record stores. That's Salty Dog out in the main line, Pennsylvania, out near Paoli, and then there's Jupiter Records down there in Wilmington. But I gotta say, man, I was kind of hating on Record Store Day the last couple of years because there wasn't a whole lot that I wanted last. But man, this year there was a lot of awesome stuff. Man, I really want this Off Live record. I really want this Tegan and Sarah Live record. I really want this Dwarf single. I really want the Guar record, unless it's like $900, which it might be. I might take out the Stooges Live record, except for I think I checked out the CD version of that once, and I think it's typical of the usual Stooges Live record from like 1969, and then it sounds like it was recorded down the street, like it's almost inaudible. So I think that's not worth the money. So I gotta investigate that. I'll pick up that Metallica demo if I can, but I'm not sweating that one too much. But the Off record, the Tegan, and the Flaming Lips EPs. If you're a Flaming Lips fan, those EPs are cool because they've got some cool David Bowie covers on them. They've got some cool live tracks. They've got some exclusives. A lot of really neat stuff on those Flaming Lips EPs. The problem with that is they're going to be like $25 each, you know. And I got to say, Record Store Day prices are kind of getting out of hand, you know.
Ridiculous.
$15 for a 7-inch, $30 for a 12-inch.
But here's the thing, man. Like, if you wait, that's the thing. If it's something like that where there's going to be 6,000 copies of that, you know what I mean, or whatever, just be patient. And if you wait 2 to 3 months, either you'll get it super cheap online from somebody who's trying to flip it on eBay and fails, or record stores just mark all that stuff down because it's all unreturnable stock. So, like, there's a store on the east side of Cleveland called Record Den, and it is absurd how much Record Store Day stuff they get every year. I mean, any title you want, they have 10 copies of it. I'm not even kidding. They have everything. And their clientele is largely like classic rock dudes. So like all those Aerosmith reissues will sell, but the Death Cab for Cutie 7-inch won't, for example. So you can go in there 3, 4, 5 months later and find that marked down to half price because they bought 10 of them and nobody bought them. So if you just have patience and it's not something that's super, super limited, you can find it somewhere else cheaper. So I'm all about trying to save money, says the guy who spent $600 on Record Store Day.
Actually, Scott, so, you bring up a great point, and we don't want to drag this conversation out too long, but actually I think this is kind of interesting. I love Record Store Day. I've been tracking Record Store economics quite a bit. And it used to be the exclusives would shoot up, stay there for 6 months. Next year, they shot up, they'd stay there for 3 months. Next year, they shot up and stay there for a month. Past 2 years, Record Store Day, the economics are insane. They shoot up the day of the record store. Like you know, a $15 7-inch will go for $100 on eBay. Next morning, it's back down to $15 or $10 even.
Remember that off 7-inch last year?
Yeah.
It was selling for like $80 or something like that.
Now you can pretty much get it for
like nine.
The market almost always cools. There are very few Record Store Day titles that retain or increase in value. Honestly, as someone who like follows this stuff too, just like John does, there's very few things that still retain value. What I've noticed is that if it's something from like Record Store Day 5 years ago, you know, like I had like a Leonard Cohen 7-inch I got years ago at Record Store Day and like never even opened. It just sat like on a shelf. And so eventually a couple months ago, I think I'll put it on eBay. I don't need this thing anymore. I'm never going to listen to it. And it sold for like $20 because it had been so long. It had been 5 or 6 years since it came out. But stuff from like last year's Record Store Day, it's all cut, you know, bottom of the bin pricing. So just have patience, punks. That's all I got to say.
Last question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah. Well, something else, like just looking through the list, like, why do I need like the Better Call Saul like soundtrack, you know, on vinyl, or like the Orange is the New Black on vinyl? I even saw walking into one record store near me, they had the Breaking Bad vinyl on like, on a double picture disc.
Wow!
And I'm just like, why?
It makes them look cool and hip.
To be fair, the one thing I absolutely have to get this Record Store Day is the double LP reissue of the WWF, the Rustling album, and its sequel, Pile Driver. That is top of my list.
Last question. There's always flippers on Record Store Day. Is that fair capitalism, or is that not in the spirit and meanness?
It's fair, but it's just like there's supposed to be like some sort of like camaraderie for Record Store Day because not everyone knows about it. And it just kind of ruins the fun and like the vibe.
It's not
everyone's there to have a good time.
It's not Mad Cut.
It's not Mad Cut.
I have flipped records in the past off of Record Store Day, and I will do it in the future.
Fuck
but
you.
But I'll tell you, if it's stuff that's good, I don't do it. If any of my friends can't make Record Store Day or whatever, and they give me a want list, I will get whatever they want. You know, I have friends who live all across the country that we text on Record Store Day and say, hey, who needs this? Who wants this? Whatever. And all those things, you know, we'll do face value. I'm not going to mark up my friends. That'd be an asshole move. But if there's some fucking fish picture disc or whatever, and some fucking asshole wants to pay $200 for it, and I can do that and make my mortgage that month, abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah. Record collectors are scum, and I know that because I am one. So yeah, I have no problem with flipping on Record Store Day. If you're a dummy and you want to pay over the price for it, go right ahead. Free market, man.
No, I'm totally cool with that. It's just like you can tell who the flippers are.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Absolutely.
So I don't like to do it. I just want what I want to get and then just get out because I hate crowds. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of don't like flippers. I mean, it's like if a flipper grabbed a record that I wanted that was like before I could get it, that's like it's like an arbitrary price increase, you know. So I don't know. It kind of pisses me off, honestly. And if I saw a record flipper, I would try to intimidate him if I could. But
just to clear my name, I will say that I flip records sometimes. I am not a record flipper. I primarily buy records to listen to.
Although I would say it is fair to flip a record if it's like if you're just at the record store and you see an underpriced record, you can buy that and flip that. At least that's
absolutely
my personal.
Goddamn absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, absolutely.
What if a record flipper buys a record by the band flipper? Is that an acceptable? I don't know. Just
speaking of things people are really excited about, Punk Rock Bowling has announced its update. And what's exciting is Punk News is a sponsor of Punk Rock Bowling. Punk Rock Bowling this year is May 22nd through May 25th, way out in Las Vegas, the city of was it Eternal Lights or whatever, or the city of sin, or what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
The city that doesn't sleep, isn't
that's
that
it? That's what it is. The City That Doesn't Sleep. And so they've announced a whole bunch of club shows. GBH is going to be doing a club show, 7 Seconds, Street Dogs. Large Ann Grace and Frank Turner are doing a show. There's actually a kind of a first wave punk show at the Fremont Country Club. Rizzillo's, Dickies, Weirdos, and The Crowd. I just saw The Crowd. Knew nothing about them. They were really cool. Johnny Madcap and The Distractions. English Beat. There's a ska night with English Beat, The Skints, and Chris Murray. There's a street punk day with a Cheap Sex, The Unseen, Clip 45, and False Cause. Strung Out, 88 Fingers, Louis. Oh, here we go. This is kind of cool. There's an anarcho-punk day with Icons of Filth, Crumb Bums, No Parents, and Anti-Vision. There's a beardo-punk day with Tim Barry, Dave Howes, Kevin Seconds, and Darius Kosky. And also one of Ricky's favorite bands, Tartar Control, is doing a
show,
too.
See them. That is, oh, they're so good.
Are you guys hitting up punk rock bowling? Even if you're not, what shows would you hit up?
I haven't gone to punk rock bowling in a number of years. I bowled in the punk news team for, I think, 3 years. I did 05, 06, 07, I think. It was really fun. I haven't been since they've kind of made it this gigantic festival, and so I don't really know how it plays out. Because back then, it was literally you just bowled, and then they had, like, one show a night that everyone went to. Like, it'd be the Bouncing Souls, or it'd be Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, or it'd be the Briefs or whatever. So now it's this massive fucking thing. It's cool, I guess, but I think it's kind of weird that you have to pay to be in punk rock bowling, then you have to pay to see the bands that are playing the punk rock bowling festival, and then all the club shows, which are part of punk rock bowling, you also have to pay for. Like, it's a very West Coast punk thing that everything costs money. It's true, because, like, that's how, like, LA punk works. It's like everything fucking costs money every step of the way. That's why I feel punk rock bowling has kind of become, where it's like, it's not wrong, it's just not my world of punk, where it's like, I don't know, man, it weirds me out that you have to pay money to go there, pay money to be a bowler, pay money on top of that to go watch the bands, and then pay money on top of that to go watch the other bands. It's like, all right, whatever they want to do. So I will not be there this year.
Scott, you mean you don't like going to the House of Blues and paying 20 just for parking?
Oh, I mean, I tell you what, man, Mandalay Bay is a beautiful place. So, but if I were to go and see one of these club shows, I would probably actually, and this might be surprising, choose the Beauty Bar show with Tim Barry, Dave Haas, Kevin Seconds, and Darius Kosky, even though I hate Tim Barry and I hate Kevin Seconds.
Why?
I think they both make awful music.
Oh, so it's not personal. You just don't like their music.
Nothing personal with Tim Barry. I think Kevin Seconds is a douche. But
why? Pourquoi?
He killed my dog.
He actually, that's true. he frequently took pot shots at my former place of employment while I still worked there. When all we were trying to do was, like, cover things that he was involved with or try to get him to be in. It's like, whatever. And he went out of his way to shit talk the company I worked for. And I'm like, dude, we're just, you know, we're the same fucking thing. And, you know, if anything, like, Kevin Seconds is a fucking, doesn't it, that's like real estate or some shit like that? Like, Kevin Seconds is not like a real punk. You know, he wears fucking polo shirts every day. Come on. But the reason I would pick this show, all right? I hope he's listening to this. Yeah. The reason I would pick this show is because Darius Kosky is opening, and his solo record that's coming out on Fat next month is so good, you guys. I don't know if you've heard this record, but it is in no way a punk rock record. Like, he's the guitar player for Swingin' Utters, for those who don't know. But this record is, like, just an incredible, like, singer-songwriter record. There's, like, a bossa nova song and a country song and, like, the cool, like, shuffle, like, jazzy song. It's such a wild record that you would never expect, A, to be on Fat Records, and B, to be made by a guy from Swingin' Utters. So I would absolutely go to that show to see Darius Kosky play solo.
I've been wanting to go forever. I've never gone. But if I had to choose, I would see Laura Jean Grace. At these, just when it comes to these club shows, I'd see Laura Jean Grace and Frank Turner. But I gotta tell you, everyone probably thinks I'm crazy, but Tartar Control puts on such a good show. I've seen them twice in, like, the last month, and they are so funny, and they have their act down so well. And they started playing new songs that are just outrageously hilarious and really good too. So I can't recommend them enough.
Yeah, I think the Laura Jean Grace and the Frank Turner show is going to be the one a lot of the punk news crowd is going to go to, and I mean, honestly, that probably will be a cool show if you're into that kind of music. I'm banking on the first wave West Coast and the first wave English punk show. The Rizzillos, who are back together again after like 10 years, that's going to be a cool show. The Dickies are cool. Weirdos are really cool. Weirdos are probably the first LA punk rock band, and they are fantastic, fantastic band. Also playing with them is a band called The Crowd, who I didn't even know anything about until about 2 weeks ago. They're like a first wave punk slash new wave band. from I think down SoCal, and they're kind of like, I don't know how to describe them. It's kind of like Devo, halfway between Devo and Danger House, like the Avengers and that kind of stuff. Mm. So very hard driving punk rock, but kind of mischievous and quirky too. So that's definitely a band to check out. Also, Icons of Filth. They're one of the, not the original crass bands, but one of the second wave of crass bands. I think they're on Bullshit Detector 3, and I know that crass put out one of their records, one of their 7-inches, that is, or maybe an EP. So that'll be a cool piece of a hardcore anarcho-punk history. That's what I'm banking on. This was like a pretty stacked lineup. Greg, anything you're into?
If I were going, I would go see me some old dude skate punk and go to the strung out 88 Fingers Louie and Pulley. I don't know who Avenues is. Does anybody know who that band is? But those other three, Avenues, I don't know. But yeah, strung out I've been listening to a lot lately because I'm going to be reviewing their new one. So I've been jamming all the classic stuff I loved in high school. And 88 Fingers Louie, that takes me back. And Pulley, Scott Radinsky, retired professional pitcher / punk rock singer. They're cool. I like them too.
And I just saw that Johnny Madcap and the Distractions are playing. I mentioned that before. That's a really cool newer band. It's kind of like Elvis Costello influenced new wave. Just a really fun band. So I would check that out if you're looking to kill some time. Check
they
out.
They put on Opener. A good show.
Oh, you've seen them live?
Yeah, I saw them like January. They're just because like I had just reviewed their 7-inch. They did that Bad Decisions. They were really good.
Well, there you have it from Ricky's mouth itself.
The mouth of babes. The mouth of babes. Sorry.
Tom DeLonge, who may or may not be in Blink 182. Who even knows? I don't even care. I don't care about Blink 182. Although, last week we were talking shit on Blink 182, and we got so much hate mail for talking shit on Blink 182.
That was fun.
Actually, Greg, you got the worst blast, honestly. You got the worst blast because you said Tom DeLonge looks like a douche. No, you said Travis Barker looks like a douche.
Well, and he does.
I don't disagree, but you got put on full blast for that. Anyways, I don't like this band, but the Punk News kids love this band. So let's talk about them. Tom DeLonge, he put out a new song. This new song is called New World, and it's off his upcoming album due out April 21st called To the Stars, .. Demos, comma, odds, and ends.
Jesus
Christ. I appreciate the enunciation of the punctuation. That was great.
So even his demo collection has a pretentious title. So yeah. The question is, do you guys care about Blink-182? Do you guys care about Tom DeLonge? Do you care if Tom DeLonge rejoins Blink-182? Or is this a cow that's out of milk?
As someone who has made their living for the past 10 years writing about Blink-182 and... I wrote two cover stories on this fucking band. Like, Tom DeLonge is DeLonge, by the way, not DeLonge, just to point that out. Clear the air. It's DeLonge, yeah. Like, why DeLonge face, basically. right? I am still a Blink-182 fan. I won't front. I think their untitled album from 2003 is still really fucking good. Their biggest problem as a band has always been that they suck as musicians live. Travis Barker overplays everything to the point of insanity, and Mark and Tom can neither sing nor play very well. So it's always been a weird thing to see them live because it's never been very good. I actually took Greg's sister to go see Blink 182 back in like 2000.
Wait, it's a date?
No, it wasn't a date. It was platonic. I mean, yeah, she blew me in the back seat of your ever.
Oh my God, fucking you! That's so gross.
It's fine. No. Anyway.
I am the podcast producer. This is all getting edited out.
Anyway, but this is the true story. I took Greg's sister to go see Blink 182 in 2004. It was Blink 182 and No Doubt and The Living End, and Blink 182 were fucking terrible. Like, we could not believe how bad they sounded for a band that was like, at the time, kings of the world, playing a 20,000 capacity outdoor arena, selling millions of records. They sounded like fucking garbage. They've since they reunited, got better. Tom DeLonge is a wacko, but I love him. And I'm all for wackos who have lots of money and aren't afraid to say things, because it makes my job as a member of the press way more entertaining.
That's true.
So it's the whole thing with Blink. I totally side with Tom in terms of like, he didn't want to do it anymore because it's kind of a fucking joke, you know? So he wants to do his fucking weird spacey bullshit with Angels and Airwaves, and that's fine. It's your money, your time, do whatever you want. I think Mark and Travis have nothing else in their life and need this, and so that's why it's gotten really weird and acrimonious. So I am Team Tom. Travis, if you will. And I think that song he put out, New World, was actually a pretty good song.
Travis had so much stuff going on for a while. Does he not have any other projects going?
I know he's actually making another Transplants record. Yeah. That's going to be a covers record. They're doing an all covers record. Him and Tim and Skinhead Rob. So I don't know what they're covering, but they're doing a covers record.
Wasn't he for a while there kind of getting in with like the legit like hip hop crowd? Wasn't he guesting on stuff? I never really followed it closely, but
he did an Eminem remix.
Right. Yeah, and I thought he'd do like live drums on stuff for rappers, and I don't know. Did he not?
He had his own MTV reality show for a while.
Oh yeah. That was a few years ago, like his about how his marriage was, how he was such an awesome dad. No, I don't know.
Yeah, so.
And then they got divorced. So.
Right.
All right, guys. Well, I'm out. You guys enjoyed the conversation. Don't brutalize my baby too much in my absence. Scott, thanks for being on the podcast. It's great to have you here. And I'll see everybody else next week. So I'll talk to you guys later.
See you, John.
The Melvin suck, John. See you later. Bye.
Hello?
Did he just fucking hang up on us?
Since he initiated the call, I guess he fucked it up there. Ricky boy.
Oh, there you go. I see
okay,
him.
Okay, here we go.
Ricky. Oh! Ricky!
All right.
I'm home.
So, should we...
And action. Okay, so, yeah, no, I'll piece it back together. Where do you guys want to pick up from? We'll stop talking about DeLong or...
All right, well, I just want to say the Melvins do suck. what other bands does John like? He likes Off. They suck. And this is not even true. I like these bands, but I'm just going to say they suck just to antagonize John.
Crass.
So Crass definitely sucks. Let's point that out. Crass
Dwarves.
Really sucks.
Dwarves.
The Dwarves were cool for like a record, but they suck. anything else? I feel like, is John Gentile a G.G. Allen fan? I feel like he'd be a G.G. Allen fan.
I've never heard him talk about G.G. Allen.
I feel like that'd be something. Well, you know, I wonder if that's like.
He's a huge Jell-O fan.
See, dude, Jell-O Biafra sucks nowadays. Jell-O Biafra used to be so cool. It's funny, like, I've recently been kind of like going back through all my music library or whatever, and, you know, thousands of songs, putting everything on shuffle and like reabsorbing shit. And I always thought that I liked the Dead Kennedys because I have all their records and I grew up on them and I fucking loved the records when I was a teenager and I had a big DK sticker on my car when I was in high school and all this kind of shit. And then every fucking time a Kennedy song comes up on my shuffle, I'm like, nope, skip.
What? Really?
The thing. Like, because people don't realize that, like, for all the awesome songs Dead Kennedys had, for every one awesome song they had, like, six really shitty songs that padded out their records. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
wait a minute.
Bent Up for Democracy had, like, you know.
It depends what album, though.
Fresh Fruit is
oh, no,
like, all the way through.
Fresh Fruit's great. Plastic Surgery Disasters is great. God We, the EP is great. But like, and even like, Give Me Convenience, Give Me Death, there's a lot of good stuff on it. But for whatever reason, like, I always get those weird songs from like Bedtime for Democracy or Frankenchrist, where I'm like, woof, skip, skip, skip. So I'm like this weird thing where I like the principle. And honestly, if they were to come around here with whatever fucking scab singer they have, I would totally go because I would love to see those songs played.
I actually went to see, I saw them recently.
Did you? Who was singing?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot his name.
Were you at the show where the guy was eating out a girl on stage?
No, that was like 2 days before me.
Oh,
that was like near San Diego. I don't know what the fuck happened there.
Did
that
you
was
go
crazy.
Ahead and recreate it at your show?
No. No.
Oh, you pussy, come on.
I didn't even know. Honestly, it didn't even hit the news until like the day after I was – like the day I was going to the show. Or maybe the day after. But they put it was like, you know, here's the thing. It's like they're never going to get back together with Jell-O, so you might as well go see them since I wasn't born. They changed up MTV Get Off the Air to MP3 Get Off the Web.
Oh, that's no.
So
that's
it was like painful. It was cool. Like East Bay Ray's like one of my favorite guitarists, and I thought,
yeah.
So it was really cool to see him and stuff like that. I just went in like with my standards just lowered a little bit, That's actually where I saw Tartar Control the first time. So
you know, that's how it is with the Misfits now too. Like, yeah, the Misfits are like bogus because it's you know the Jerry Only Misfits. But like, if you go in with like low expectations, you'll have a fucking amazing time. You know, because it's a show. You know what I mean? Like, and then seeing Danzig last year, or the year before last, playing Danzig Legacy sets with Doyle and doing like a half hour of Misfits songs was unfucking real. It was
I'm sure. But now I have a question for you. I just bought a ticket to see them in Santa Ana, the Misfits, but they're only doing it's a Static Age only show.
Really?
Yeah, and then they're doing a best of set after. So I think I kind of did the best I could there.
All right, here's a question for the two of you. We're just going to get way off the rails here. Yeah. What has a better likelihood of happening in their lifetimes? Jello reuniting with Dead Kennedys or Danzig reuniting with Misfits?
God.
What has a better likelihood of happening?
Yes. Which one do you... Or option number three, Rollins reuniting with Greg Ginn for Black Flag. Which of those three is the most likely to happen?
I'd say Danzig.
Yeah.
Danzig with Misfits. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, God, everyone sued each other. That's the problem.
I know. And all three of those bands.
Yeah, so I would...
There would be a lawyer on stage at all times.
Very slightly, I would go with... I would go with Danzig and the Misfits because Jello just will have absolutely nothing to do with the other guys.
He's way too stubborn about everything. That's just his personality. Like, he's not going to back down. No way.
No. I remember when all that shit was breaking between those two, and like, you know, it was when the DKs had reformed and they had all these things and people were giving them all this shit. And I remember they posted on the Dead Kennedys website fucking royalty checks that Jello had cashed, and he was saying that like he hadn't received anything or whatever, and they're like, here's a check for $35,000 that's voided that you cashed, and it's like, you got your money, you know. So I feel like Jello, first off, Jello is a millionaire. People need to know that. Dude lives in a fucking mansion in like the hills of San Francisco, which, no hate on that, like, dude made his money, good for him, but like, he definitely feels a little disingenuous sometimes with some of the things he does. You know what I mean? Like yeah. he's not really practicing what he preaches anymore. But what the fuck am I to say? You know, whatever. I'm not a true punk either. So what am I going to say? But speaking of true punks, though, we should segue into the next story. Speaking of true punks, a Third Eye Blind Dashboard Confessional tour.
Oh, yeah.
So
take that, John. We're going to talk about this for a half hour.
Get your boots and braces on, my friends. Get on your studded leather jackets. And Greg taught me last week on our podcast how to properly spike a mohawk. He said use a flattening iron, and I learned this. Use glue and a flattening iron.
No glue. Hairspray.
Hairspray and a flattening iron.
Glue is unnecessary.
So who will I see in the pit for Third Eye Blind and Dashboard?
I wasn't aware this band was still around, to be
honest. Which one?
Third Eye Blind.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, Third Eye Blind's been more active than Dashboard. Dashboard hasn't played, hasn't done a tour, a full band tour, in 5 years, almost. And the singer, Chris Caraba, has like a folk band now called Twin Forks, which is like his version of Mumford & Sons, essentially.
Oh, boy.
So this kind of came out of left field. No one expected them to be doing Dashboard all of a sudden. And then Third Eye Blind are just fucking, you know, pop rock fucking, you know, they won't go away. They're cockroaches.
Do they put out records still?
Yeah, they had a record a couple years ago. It wasn't very good.
You know, unfortunately, I will not be in the pit because I do not see any dates near me except for like Irvine, which is 60 miles. And I'm sorry, but I don't think I can do the 60-mile drive both ways to see Third Eye Blind.
Where is Paso Robles or Valley Center?
Paso Robles is near, it's like on the way up to San Francisco. It's probably like 250, 300 miles away from Los Angeles, north. Valley Center, I don't know where that is, actually. I'm gonna look.
It's in a casino, it says. It's in Harrah's, it's a fucking casino.
Do these venues surprise you guys? I mean, yeah,
they're big venues. They're all like 4,000 to 5,000 cap.
It's all not pavilion, big. pavilion, yeah. Amphitheater, pavilion. I mean, like, Indianapolis would be the one close to me, an hour away. Farm Bureau Insurance Lawn at White River Park.
If
the venue name is more than two words, I don't want to go there. So even House of Blues, that's too many words.
Okay, so it turns out the Valley Center is like, it's between, oh God, it's more near San Diego. It's like halfway between San Diego and...
San Diego,
and like Anaheim, which is even further away. So I again will not be in the pit for Third Eye Blind.
Now, question: if Tartar Control was opening, would you go to the show?
Ooh, not that far. No,
Tartar Control featuring Jell-O.
They put you on the guest list. If they put you on the guest list, would you go?
They should put me on the guest list. I gave them a great review.
that's how music journalism works, kids. It's all smash.
They sometimes come up to Hollywood every once in a while to the Roxy, which one word. I'll see them when they come up here. But no Third Eye Blind.
Can I go ahead and keep up the theme and read what Madball Rules Smells the Bacon posted on this article? he said, "Yo, diss the motherfucking gathering of the pansies."
you know who's gonna be? You know who I can guarantee will be at the store? And I don't think they've come back to Pung News in a while. But you guys might remember Steve Jones, the Real Bones.
Yes.
Steve Jones, the Real Bones, I guarantee you will be at one of these shows. You know who else will be there? Wuss Emo Rock.
Do you know who he is? For real?
Wuss Emo Rock? No idea.
Oh, okay.
No. But he is a cockass. I know that. Wuss Emo Rock is a cockass. if I remember my Punk News lore correctly, that was in the old FAQ that we made for Punk News.
Right.
Where we had all these questions. And I had a question where it said, "Why is Wuss Emo Rock a cockass?" And I wrote, "The world may never know."
Man, Ricky, do you remember any of this stuff? God, Ricky was in diapers when Wuss Emo Rock was red.
How old are you, Ricky?
Just kidding, Ricky.
I'm 23.
Jesus Christ, you were in fucking diapers. God damn it. This is literally 14 years ago.
I don't even think I started reading the org till like high school.
Did you even know who Green Day was 14 years ago? Like in 2000, did you know who Green Day was?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I remember seeing, I forgot what album came out that year, but it was either, Warning?
Yeah, AKA Warning. Their best record, by the way. Warning is their best record.
let's go down that road. Okay.
Yeah, so I do remember it.
I can't even imagine being 9 years old and knowing who Green Day is. But I guess it's a fucking different world now.
The internet. MC Hammer. I was looking at the Rosillo's review by Mr. Tom Trauma, staffer. Why doesn't he have a staff button up there still?
I don't have. I've been here for a year. I still don't have one.
Well, we hate you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm only 14, right?
You know we love you.
And the best part is, I still have one. Like, if I leave a comment, I'm in fucking blue. And I haven't written a fucking leave for Pug News in like 9 years. So, membership has its perks, gentlemen.
I'm in green because I killed Intruder Blue and I took his computer. he did. No, but on this Rosillo's review, I went back and I read, because I heard about Rosillo's from the Jackass the Movie soundtrack, which I reviewed. I'm pretty sure you gave it to me, Scott. That sounds correct. With the Jackass soundtrack, which is a really fucking good soundtrack.
Has the Minutemen on it, has NWK on it, has CKY.
Yeah, it has the Rosillo's, it has the Ramones, Sahara Hot Nights, who were pretty good. Misfits, Hush. They were like the female Hives, but I mean, not as good. Misfits.
If you want to scream, then scream with me.
And then it had Slayer and Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Together? Like on one track?
Yes, no. In rapid succession.
It's like the Judgment Night soundtrack. All right, well, getting back on topic, is anyone honestly going to go to this tour besides me? Because I will 100% be attending the opening night of this tour because I'm a Dashboard Confessional fan. And as I frequently remind people in Cleveland, I moved to Cleveland in 2004. The last time Dashboard Confessional played Cleveland was before I lived here. It was 2003. So explain to me how a fucking dude who is selling a million records and going on these massive tours or whatever has not played Cleveland, Ohio, our market, in over a decade. So, and literally the other night at a show, I was complaining to somebody about this, and the next fucking day they announced this tour. So, I think that my opinion set this tour in motion. You're all welcome, unless you don't want to, in which case I apologize. Third Eye Blind is terrible live, so I will be leaving before Dashboard Confessional, before they go on stage, but I will go see Dashboard Confessional.
So, you've seen Third Eye Blind before?
I saw Third Eye Blind for free a few years ago at South by Southwest, and they were so bad I left like 30 minutes into their set because everything sounded terrible. You know, it was awful.
Why would they be at South by? South by Southwest, I was going to bring this point up about Record Store Day. Like, South by Southwest and Record Store Day, they're, like, headed the same direction. Like, why would a band... Like, it used to be about obscure stuff, and now it's about money and just big-name bands putting out something weird just to get more money. I mean...
Well, yeah. Well, what do you think... What do you think Coachella is?
Yeah, yeah. Well, South by Southwest Coachella is different. It's... or it was supposed to be different.
Yeah, you know, I mean... South by Southwest is not worth going. Here's the thing. Like, all the people who go to South by Southwest now are brands. It's fucking McDonald's, right. Fucking Doritos, and they're all trying to buy attention. That's all it is. And they want to be cool with musicians and managers and labels and whatever it is. Like, it's very crass commercialism down there, and it's not really worth going to paying-wise. I've went, I think, 5 years in a row, or maybe 4 or 5 years in a row. And it was paid, like, I didn't pay. You know what I mean? I was sent there for work. They bought me a badge. They bought me a hotel. And so I would happily go for that because I just go to the small shows that aren't just part of South by Southwest and go watch cool bands. Yeah. But, like, yeah, all these fucking big bands play there. And I'm like, you know, Stone Temple Pilots played 1 year and whatever. Although I did, but hold on, to be fair though, when Guitar Hero was launching the Metallica expansion of Guitar Hero, they flew Metallica in to play a secret show at a club called Stubbs, which is like an outdoor venue. It's a barbecue restaurant that has a big stage behind it, which holds like 1,000 or so people, which for Metallica is really fucking small. And I was able to catch wind of this happening before it was about to start. So my friend and I got in, and we got on the fucking rail, on the fucking barricade for Metallica. And so, you know, even though I think South by Southwest is kind of fucking whack, I got to see Metallica front row for like a 90-minute set, which is worth every bruise and bump I got. So
I'm so glad that they were able to play so that they could get discovered.
Yeah, they almost got signed.
Now that's where they got their. Aren't they a Fat Records now?
They're on Honest Don's.
Actually. That's like decade or more. You know, it's been like ever since college. It's like, oh, someday one of my bands will play like CMJ showcases or we'll play South by Southwest. And it's like, I don't fucking want to. I've heard that it's awful being a band, being like an unknown band, because you got I guess we're competing against Third Eye Blind and Stone Temple Pilots and Flaming Lips.
You're competing against everyone, and you don't get paid. You can't sell merch, and I should say it this way: a lot of bands don't even bring merch because bands book so many shows while they're there because you want to play in front of as many people as you can because you never know who might be the fucking Taco Bell ad rep or whatever. So you book like 4 or 5 shows a day.
Right.
So you just see bands running up and down 6th Street in Red River all the time, going from club to club, because all the clubs are next door to each other. So they're running from club to club to club and jumping on stage, and they sound progressively worse each time. Like, I saw Minus the Bear once down at South By, and I love Minus the Bear, huge fan of Minus the Bear. I'd seen them a bunch of times, and I caught their very last set of the weekend, and they just sounded awful because they were just exhausted. You know what I mean? Like, they usually sound great. They're a very good live band, and I saw them, and it was like Sunday night, and you could just tell they were dead because you can only go so hard and so fast before you just crash. So nobody gets signed to South By. Nobody breaks at South By. It's all a fucking bunch of smoke and mirrors. And really,
not anymore.
It's whatever. You know, it's the point being, take the money you were gonna spend at South By and go buy a front row seat to see Dashboard Confessional and Third Eye Blind. That's what I'm saying. And with that, we will close that tab of the story and move on to a different story.
Let's move on to Fucked Up.
It's actually F-A-E-E.
I was just about to say that. I was just thinking that. Fucked Up is going to release Year of the Hare, H-A-R-E. They've announced plans to release, it's the next of their Chinese Zodiac 12-inch series. And Year of the Hare will be released via Death Wish Records on June 16th. Year of the Hare, I love how John wrote this. He said, Year of the Hare, as in the song, runs almost 22 minutes, while the B-side, California Cold, comes in at a paltry 8 minutes. So Year of the Dragon was their last one, which was that last year?
They do one every year. They do a new year of every year until they get through the entire Zodiac.
They're like Wu-Tang was for Japanese stuff. They're for Chinese stuff. You know,
yes, okay.
Here's
what I've realized about Fucked Up. I thought I liked Fucked Up. I do not like Fucked Up.
I don't really like them either.
They're one of those bands where I like the idea behind them, but could not give two shits about the music they make, which maybe this says something about my attention span, because I know, first off, Adam White will crucify me when he hears this. I'm sure he fucking worships the ground that fucked up walks on. But it just never clicks with me. It feels like hardcore for people who don't like hardcore. You know, it's Pitchfork hardcore, which isn't their fault. It isn't their fault, because, you know, they're just making the music they make, but they're one of those bands, same as like, what's that fucking band, Trash Talk, who are awful, but Pitchfork loves them, and so they're like the standard bearer, in quotation marks, for hardcore, because Pitchfork likes them. And it's like, oh, God, there's so many better hardcore bands out there.
You know, I got into this band kind of late, and I had to kind of like backtrack with them. I got to tell you, the No Passer On and Police and the Police EP are awesome. Mm. Those are really good hardcore things, and then they start going into these like their full lengths started becoming a little progressively more polished for some reason, and I'm like on a love-hate relationship with them. I saw them like in August, I think, and they put this is a band that puts on a fucking fantastic show.
Yeah, I bet.
If you see them live, holy shit, really great. What completely threw me off, though, I don't even think the venue was like a third full, and it was a fairly, I'm sure this venue probably could have held like 500 people.
That's the problem with bands like that, where, you know, people think that like critical acclaim matters, and it fucking does not.
No,
like bands that get like here's a perfect example. I know, Greg, you're a fan of this band, Surfer Blood, who got jocked hard on Pitchfork for like a year straight until the guy got arrested for beating his girlfriend. So fuck that guy. But their first record got jocked super hard. I remember Chris Farron from Fake Problems telling me how like they played some shows with Surfer Blood, and they thought they'd be like these really good shows because one, they were fans of the band, and two, they're like, oh, well, that band's super, you know, hot right now on Pitchfork, blah, blah, blah. And the shows were worse attended than like a typical Fake Problems show, because it's all smoke and mirrors. Like, you can give something a 9.7 all fucking day long, but that virtually never translates to people actually plunking down $15 to go out on a Tuesday night to see your band. Like, this is not, because that's not punk rock. You know what I mean? Like, 9.7 is not punk rock. Punk rock is saying, oh, there's a show tonight, I better fuck go there and support people, you know? And a band like Fucked Up, while they're a punk rock band in ethos, that scene has been left behind by them because they were embraced so quickly by the indie rock, you know, what do they call them? Blognasati, or what the fuck they call them, or whatever they call those people. Bloggerati, I don't even know.
Tastemakers.
Yeah. In huge fucking quotation marks, tastemakers. Fucking right. Taste this, taint makers.
Good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be honest, like, I didn't get into them. I mean, Ricky, you said you were late to the game. I mean, when Pitchfork was giving them a lot of hype, I mean, it was like, was it Chemistry of Common Life, or was it?
I think it was David Comes to Life.
David Comes to Life. Yeah.
Like I actually remember. Damien went on like a Fox News show to talk about it because the Fox News host even loved that album.
I remember that.
Yeah.
So I listened to that.
Fox News Red Eye is like that weird 3 a.m. show that like they actually put cool stuff on. Like, that's like when Andrew WK goes on Fox News. It's not really Fox News, but
so funny.
Yeah. It's not like he's a Republican. You know what I mean?
Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
Well, I was just actually going to talk about Fucked Up instead of Fox News. No, that's fine. Let's rep Madball and Fox News. So I listened to that. And I listened, you know, I got the next couple things. I never got Glass Woods because just by that point, I was just burnt out on, like, does everything have to be a magnum opus? I mean, it's just too much. Like, the it's like something about like almost like prog music, like, or like Emerson, Lake and Palmer, where like everything has to be more massive than the next in scope and theme and concept and yada yada. But it's like, it's supposed to be hardcore, and you listen to the music, like their songs do not require being 22 minutes long. I can't imagine what this song is going to sound like. It wears me out. But,
yeah, I honestly feel exhausted after I listen to David Comes to Life, and it's I don't know, and there's some good stuff on there, but I don't know why I can't listen to, like, I think hardcore was meant to be this long.
Right.
I mean, and you know, maybe that's a fault of ours. Like, maybe they want you to feel that way when you finish listening to it. Like,
maybe,
and maybe it's not meant to be easily digested. So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say, like, Fucked Up sucks. But I just, for whatever reason, like, it just becomes a wall of sound to me, and I can't,
right.
I can't properly process it. Like, my ears just get fatigued listening to Fucked Up. So,
now,
maybe this year of the fucking rabbit, whatever, changed my mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah. but I doubt it.
Here's what you guys need to listen to instead. Have you guys heard Young Gov?
No.
Young Gov is Ben Cook from Fucked Up. I believe he's one of the guitar players.
Do you
guys know? Yeah, Ben Cook has a side project called Young Gov. I think it's a solo thing. I'm reviewing it. John wants it pretty soon because of the Fucked Up connection. I put it on, and the way John described it was that it was more like electronic and whatever. So I'm like, okay, you know, it sounds cool. Might be well read reviews, so I'll check it out. It's a twee record. Like, it's the total opposite end of the spectrum, and I love it. It's like little tinny drum machines, reverb like crazy on these jangly guitars, echoed vocals just echoing like crazy, and like very like kind of wispy and jangly and sugary, and just the complete opposite. Like, I couldn't have been more surprised. I mean, I knew it would be a departure, and like, he's not going to do the same thing as his main band. That would be silly. But I was taken aback, and I'm really, really liking it. It's on Slumberland, which is the home of all of these, you know, like these noise pop bands, noise pop, twee, all this kind of, these like ragtag people that listen to punk but don't want to play punk music. They're just like, we're going to be loud but not angry, or we're going to be, I don't know if you guys are, what's that?
Do you know who else is on Slumberland?
I know a lot of bands that are on Slumberland. Who are you thinking of? What?
Devin Williams, who used to sing for Oscar.
Huh. I did not know that.
And all of his solo shit sucks.
Really?
So, okay. Slumberland is in my black mark category for that.
Because
Oscar trumps all that. So
no.
If Slumberland.
Black Tambourine.
Listen, motherfucker. If Slumberland gives these fucking punks an outlet to not be awesome punk bands anymore, then I hate them.
That's not what they're about at all. Slumberland was started by a band called Black Tambourine from Baltimore in the late 80s. They've been around fucking forever. Velocity Girl came out of that. All of these great, you wouldn't have Vivian Girls. Or
any, I'm okay with that.
Well, okay.
That's fine.
No, but like all these. Okay.
Listen, Greg, I'm doing this for the Punk News commenter. You think that you're the indie rock guy? I'm taking a shit all over you because I have to. I'm doing it for the commenters.
Slumberland is great.
Well, Devin Williams' solo records on Slumberland are garbage.
I'll go listen and decide for myself. Do they have a lot of reverb on them?
I'm going to go listen to Idle Will Kill by Oscar because it fucking rules.
Okay.
So
that's Oscar with a K, right?
All right.
It is Oscar with a K. Let's do one more story and get the fuck out of here.
Skip Melvin's.
I'm going to defer to Ricky. Ricky, you want to pick Anti-Flag, Ricky?
Yeah. So I don't like Anti-Flag, but what we're going to talk about because it has, it's a new album coming out. So Anti-Flag have detailed their upcoming debut from Spine Farm Records. The record is titled American Spring and is due out on May 26, 2015. The cover features a woman wearing a black hijab veil, and while the cover is an American soldier with combat fatigues. Both of their faces are obscured by an exploding pink flower. On March 31st, the first track of the album, Fabled World, will be premiered worldwide. I've ragged on this band before, so I won't go into it too much. I once went into a record store, looked at the back of some record that they put out, just because I kept hearing about this band, and to me, it just looked like punk rock Mad Libs on the back, like it's just very fill in the blank stuff.
Yep.
I've heard some of the stuff. I wasn't a fan. Sometimes I think what they do, like further in the media a little bit, is on the obnoxious side. But I'm not going to rip on them too hard because I have before. I actually think the artwork is pretty interesting. It's pretty provocative, which is them. That's just been their thing. So I don't know. Are you, either of you two anti-Flag fans?
No, I can safely say that my favorite thing they've ever done is this artwork.
It's where it gets kind of weird because, like, I think Anti-Flag serve a very important purpose in the punk scene. That said, I have never, literally in my entire life, my 33 fucking years on this planet, I have never purchased an Anti-Flag record ever, with the exception of they put out a split 7-inch with Against All Authority in like 1998 or something like that. And my record store, the record store I worked at, had a copy of it. And I was like, this looks cool. I'll buy this. And I bought it. First time I ever heard the band. And I was like, took it home, listened to it. I was like, this sucks. Sold it the very next day. It's a true story. True story. I have never bought another Anti-Flag record since. I've listened to them because I've seen them a million times because they always tour with bands I want to see. I pretty much have their entire set memorized now. And in spite of my thoughts about the band, like, yeah, it's like punk rock training wheels, whatever. There's still a real need for that because there are very few bands at their level or higher that go out of their way to be political and be leftist and use the platform they've been given to continually push those things. So even though I feel like their songs can be pretty paint by numbers at times, and honestly, I'm sure the people in the band think the same way, but that's what they are. That's what, you know, Anti-Flag's not going to make a fucking, what was that terrible Face to Face record that everyone hates, Greg? The one that was slow?
Ruin Everything?
No. It was the major label one that everyone hated.
The first major label one was the self-titled.
Not that one. It was the one after that that everyone hated it because it was super slow.
Yeah, I was already that. I think I got out of them because of that, right?
All right. Well, yeah. That's what I'm saying. So the point being, like, Anti-Flag's never going to make like that weird, creatively challenging record where you're like, oh wow, they're doing an 8-minute jazz solo. Like, Anti-Flag write 2.5-minute punk songs and usually pretty catchy. And hopefully, the 14-year-old who sees them at Warped Tour in between Ask Me Alexandria and Attila will
and maybe, falling like, in reverse.
Yeah, and so that's the thing is like that's the role they serve now. Is like, you know, it was funny seeing Anti-Flag because Anti-Flag play Cleveland all the time because they're from Pittsburgh. So they always are routed through or they always did well here. But over time, like their draw dropped. Like it wasn't doing as well as it had been in recent years. And I go see them on Warped Tour and they'd be playing the main stage and there'd be nobody watching them. And it kind of got really sad for a while. But then a crazy thing happened about 2 years ago when they were on the Warped Tour again. They were the only punk band on Warped Tour. Literally on the main stage, it was metalcore band, metalcore band, metalcore band, metalcore band, like one pop band, and then Anti-Flag. And so they became like the novelty of the tour. So they had huge crowds because kids had never seen a punk band. They had seen all these fucking Cookie Monster Growl bullshit bands, but had never seen Mohawks and like fast songs. They drew huge crowds. And they ended up like carrying the momentum into like where they are now. It's kind of crazy. Like they've kind of had this rebirth of their band with an entirely new group of 15-year-old kids who don't know anything yet.
If they can be like that, what Rancid was for me, and like that springboard band, I'm all about that. They do. I do see your point for sure that they fill a need in the punk rock scene. They're a big band, but they still sing about the same stuff they've always sung about. So you know, good on them for that for sure.
Yeah, I have a question. Have you guys heard of Spineform Records? Because I have not. And has anything come off of them, come out from them Spineform, that's anything good?
Well, Spineform started off as like a big European label. It's a big metal label. Like they have like Children of Bodom and they have like Nightwish and stuff like that. So now they have like a U.S. branch. And like their current roster is still like a bunch of metal bands. It's like Atreyu just signed them because Atreyu reunited. Like they put out the last Killing Joke record, which is crazy. I actually like Killing Joke a lot. It's a weird label for them to be a part of because they have no other punk bands. So it's an interesting approach for that they're taking. Because, you know, you could be on Psy1W, you could be on Fatter, you could be on Epitaph, but at the end of the day, you're not going to reach anybody new. I mean, like, Anti-Flag putting out a new record on Fat will reach the exact same 15,000 people it's going to reach, you know, that's as far as it's going to go. But if they use a different label with different connections with different parts of the music industry and they have different fan bases and whatever, like they might reach new ears. And I feel like that's always been Anti-Flag's mission is to reach new ears. That's why they send to a major label. Because it's like, well, we can take a major label's resources and maybe get a song on the radio and maybe turn some kids on to something different, you know? So I feel like that's how that band views their career as we exist as a gateway drug to punk rock and we're totally okay with it. Which is why like Chris Number Two and Chris Head had that awesome other band, White Wives, which is a really cool band that doesn't sound like Anti-Flag at all. It sounds more like Dust of Parasitos or something. And that's probably their more artistically fulfilling endeavor. And then Anti-Flag is the thing that they just do because that's what they're good at. That's their job. You know, it's just like the guys in Pennywise or the guys in, you know, NoFX. Like, it's their job. That's what they do. They make these records.
I'm looking at spinefarmrecords.com, and you have to select your region because it has, like, Sweden and Norway and blah, blah, blah. And I'm pretty sure the band that Death Clock is based off of is on this label. I'm looking at Murderface right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a traditional label. And when I found out they were signed to Spine Farm, I was like, wow, that's a risk. But at the same time, like, Anti-Flag have a pretty solid built-in fan base that's always going to buy their records. So you might as well try to go a different direction and see what it brings up. And knowing Anti-Flag, it's probably a one record deal, because I remember their major label deal was either for one or two records. Their Side One Dummy deal was for like one or two records. Like, they're very conscious of the fact that they don't lock themselves in anywhere. They try something, and if it works, they stick with it. And if it doesn't, they peace out. So, you know, they're smart businessmen. I'm pretty sure Justin Sane is like a financial planner or something like that in Pittsburgh. That's like his day job. Is he like does financial planning for people? So,
And does he also do family planning?
I don't know. I do know that former Punk News alum Kirby Puckett, who's a commenter from back in the day, he lives in Pittsburgh and has told me that one time he and some of his friends went to like a sex store, like a sex shop or whatever, an adult store. And who do they fucking see there but Justin Sane buying like a big purple dildo? So Justin Sane is sex positive. That's good. He probably re-listens to the Dan Savage podcast, which is cool. So I support that.
Guys, I want you to go look at Death Clock here. I just instant messaged you a link.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Metzatol, their picture on Spine Farm Records, is just a bunch of flames and a guy with like huge double kick drum and a guy has like a guitar or like some sort of Game Boy hanging from him. I can't tell what that is. It's like a big orange Game Boy. And then up top, an Enciferum, parentheses, alumni. They look pretty cool too.
Hey, man.
Like war paint. They're going to come me now. They're going to come murder me with like a big sword.
Well, so maybe we should sign off and get out of here before they catch wind.
It's probably a good idea.
I think it's probably time for us to peace out. Before we go, I'll do the last plug for our stuff. Greg and I have a podcast called Best Midwestern, which is part of the Punk News Podcast Network. That sounds pretty fancy, right? It releases every other Friday. We'll have a new episode this Friday. I don't know when this podcast comes out. Check it out. Facebook.com/Best Midwestern. Twitter.com/Best Midwestern. BestMidwestern@gmail.com. We'd love to have you as a listener, and you can tell us how terrible I am for liking Best Broken Vinyl. Silence.
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds good. John here to do all the official stuff, or Adam. Anything else to add, Ricky, or we'll just call it a day?
Baba Booey, Howard Stern's penis.
You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. You can follow me at Twitter on @DesertBurst92. Let's see. And thanks, Greg, for editing and doing all and getting us up on iTunes and Stitcher and all that stuff. And we will be back next week.
All right. Bye.